For many of you who are just joining in today, Steve Nagel is back. It is good to have you here. I have
worst
to say.
Vacation ever.
Yeah, I would imagine it would have been. I'm just glad to finally stop having to do all your work.
Yeah,
you didn't do all his work. I did plenty of the production stuff too, and we're both getting guests all this entire time.
I heard one of the wasn't at the shows over the weekend, but I did hear one of the jokes.
Of which one? What show?
That my wife had given me three great gifts. Was Buddy, Champ, and 8 weeks off of Bax and O'Brien.
That was Fitzy's joke.
Yeah, that's right.
Great line.
So I guess I should start where this all started, I guess, with my my wife. Last summer, she was out washing windows. It was the end of August, and there was an area where we don't really use that much, and she was washing one of the windows. And as she was washing the windows, a bunch of bees come out and sting her. She got stung six times.
Oh, she got stung multiple times.
Yeah.
Oh.
Two in the hand, two in the neck area, and then two in the head.
Mm.
But she's a tough cookie, you know, and she got the stingers out, put some Benadryl on, and that was kind of the end of it that we thought. And then about 5 days later, her neck started swelling up. Like right where she had gotten stung. And then she wasn't feeling well. And then I said to her, I said, look, you know, now it's time to go to the doctor's office. You need to get some treatment. So we went to one of those MedExpress places.
Mm-hmm.
To which they said, you need to go to an ER because there's something there and we can't figure it out what's going on the neck portion.
Besides, we're not even real doctors.
No, we're just express doctors.
Yeah. We're just expressing our opinion about medical problems.
Dr. Nick.
Hi, everybody. Go to the ER.
So we go to the ER over at Noble Hospital. And after they did some tests, they did some scans, and the doctor had come in, and he was really kind of, I thought, a little overdramatic for a bee sting. And, you know, he comes in, he closes the door, he has the nurse hold my wife's shoulder, and then he holds her hand, and then he tells her that the thing in her neck could be some sort of lymphoma or something. And I was really upset because I'm thinking, we came in here for a bee sting. What are you, WebMD and stuff over there behind the counter? Like, you know, you put in the symptoms and this is what you got? You know, anybody can have cancer by multiple symptoms, cold symptoms could be indicating that you might have cancer. So I was really kind of upset about that. But we wanted to get more tests to make sure that everything was okay. And they had sent us to an oncologist at Noble, and Dr. Glenn. And when he came in the exam room the next day, he basically said what I said, you know, what, you got stung by bees and now you think you have cancer? And I explained to him the story about how we got up here. So then he proceeds to go through about 100 different symptoms somebody with cancer would have. You know, night sweats, coughing blood, any number of things. And my wife says no to every single one of them. So the fact that the bee sting had compromised the area, he opted not to do a biopsy at that time because it would have been compromised anyway with whatever venom or anything from a bee sting was in there. So we actually were okay with that. And you guys were all privy to this.
Mm-hmm.
I think you remember me texting you, and I had taken a day off the next day. And for the course of from the end of August to the end of October, they had her on antibiotics, and the antibiotics would make the lump would go down, and then sometimes it would come back a little bit, but then it was like a, you know, you don't go to the doctor every week. You're going every 2 to 3 weeks to do it. So she maybe saw him 4 times, and she was supposed to see him one last time before Veterans Day. And about 5 days before Veterans Day, the lymph node was gone, but her stomach started distending.
Was that lump on her neck at the exact spot of one of the bee stings?
Yes.
Or, oh, it was the exact spot.
So her stomach started distending.
Mm.
So that's when they ordered a full body scan. And they found multiple tumors spread throughout her body, which was on her ovaries, on her in her lymph nodes. That one where she got stung, that was, you know, showing up on there as well. And it was all over, and they didn't know where it was coming from. They assumed that it was ovarian cancer that this was originating from. And then after they did more testing and the pathology test came back, it was determined that it was coming from the digestive system that some place. So the day before Thanksgiving, it was kind of weird for me not to be at the Mayflower Marathon after having been there for almost 15 years now and then not being part of the entire thing. We go in for a colonoscopy and an endoscopy the day before Thanksgiving, and that's where they confirmed that she had esophageal cancer. They found a tumor at the bottom of her esophagus, where the esophagus meets the stomach. So, of course, you know, this is throwing us through a loop. I mean, she's a non-smoker. She's a social drinker. This doesn't happen to us, you know what I mean? Mm. If anybody was going to be a candidate for cancer, it would have been me because of all the crap that I've done to my body over the years. You know, this shouldn't be happening. And it turns out it was some sort of genetic thing. There was a great-grandmother or something along the lines that died of some sort of stomach problems that nobody really knew about, but that was like kind of the only thing that they could make a connection to. I don't know. It could have been some other outside force to it, but irregardless, now we have it. Mm. You know, it's here. And so we went on treatments. She didn't want to hear any prognosis. You know, how many months you have or how many days you have, and we knew it was pretty serious. I'm sorry.
No,
take your time.
Whatever you need.
And you know, she fought hard. She fought real hard, and she, you know, she went to those treatments, and she was just glowing every time she was there. She, you know, compliments from the nurses and the doctors going, you look great, and you know, you're doing all the right things, and she's taking care of her body, and she's doing all these things, and finally, at the end of March, she had one last set of scans, and the scans had come back, and all the tumors were reducing in size, all of them, and that we were very happy about that, obviously. I mean, this is like, okay, this is, you know, moving in the right direction. We're going to be that the one that makes it through all this, and, you know, we're going to have a good story to tell and tell people how to, you know, find the symptoms to it and all this other stuff. And then she started having some nerve pain. And it was really, really bad. And we thought it was the side effects from the chemo, because that can affect your nervous system. And from the course of April 1st to probably April 6th, it just got progressively worse, the pain. And I've never seen somebody in so much pain before. And everybody's trying to figure out why and what's causing this. And we finally go to the oncologist for an appointment. And then he says, we need to get you up into the cancer center at Mercy. And put some injection, like hydration and pain medication, so they can kind of figure out what's going on. And she had gone up there, and they did the hydration. They gave her some morphine, and she finally settled down. And then we went home that night. It was a Wednesday night, and maybe 3 hours after we were home, she starts with the wailing pain again. And it's so bad that I called my wife's sister and I said, one of us needs to go to the ER with her. Like, we need to do this. So can you come over and watch the kids, or can you take her or whatever? So then my sister-in-law came over. she took my wife down to the ER at Mercy, and then there was really not a whole lot done other than pain meds, and then she was sent home at 5 o'clock in the morning. And after she came home, it was another 2 hours when the pain meds started to wear off that she started getting bad again with the pain. The pain started getting worse. So I wound up, frantically making phone calls. I'm also trying to get the kids out to school, off to school that day. And it's, you know, it's chaotic. And we finally get a hold of the doctor, and he tells us to bring her back down to the cancer center, and they can, you know, do some things there. And later that day, they finally admitted her to the hospital. And they did a scan on her spine. And it turns out that the cancer had spread all up her spine and in her vertebrae and into her brain. And all it takes is one of those cells to get into the spine for that to happen. And, of course, you're not going to, you know, I've learned a lot about this, and scans just don't, you know, if they do a scan of your body, that doesn't show everything. It only shows the points that they're focusing on. So there was no reason to have done a spinal scan up until this point, because there was nothing that was causing any concern that would be a call for a spinal scan. And it had spread all in her brain, and that's what was causing all the pain. So, you know, after a long weekend of trying to talk to her, because she's hopped up on pain meds for the most part, but they're trying to wean her off some of the pain meds to make her stable enough to go home, because there's different types of medications that are not available at home. This is all this. Again, I don't fully understand everything, but I'm like, okay, maybe we can stabilize her. And there was an option of getting radiation, which would have been radiation on the brain, and, you know, all these things that we would have had to have done to go to Boston to do all these things. But then all weekend long, the doctors that were up on the floor were telling me to sign a DNR, because I was her healthcare proxy, and the do not resuscitate order, because in the event that she stopped breathing or something like that, they wouldn't revive her. And I said, well, you know what? I'm not going to be the one to play God here. I said, she's awake, and you need to explain to her what's going on, because I don't think she's going to listen to me right now anyway. She feels like she's going to be going for radiation on Monday morning, the way you have talked to her about this. So I was a little upset about the pussyfooting around about the, you know, just tell her, you know, right. Just tell her. And they finally, on Sunday morning, the doctor had come in and he explained to her everything, her and I, everything that was going on. And he finally said to her, you know, he had asked her the date and the time to make sure that she knew what was going on. And she knew all that. And he said, do you understand what I'm telling you? And she says, I'm dying. And he goes, yes, and you're dying very quickly. And that was, you know, we did get her home to hospice care, and she passed 4 days later at our home. I don't know what else to tell you other than, you know, just how quickly it happened and how it seemed like a blur to me. I don't, sometimes I don't want to remember all the things that happened, but it was just, I had to make all these split second decisions. Once we decided that she was going to be going home, and, you know, rearranging the house, their hospice comes in, there's a bed, there's, you know, there's things to be delivered to the home, and everybody, I can't name names, because there's so many people that have helped us through all of this that I don't want to single anybody out and make anybody else feel bad, but am just overwhelmed by the emotion and the help from the community over this whole thing. And it's been an awful, awful, awful experience because she was a great mom. She was just a great person overall. And you know, we had a great marriage and we have two beautiful children. And it just doesn't seem fair. So, you know, this is why I've been gone. This is why I had to make sure that my kids got the right care. And thank God that we did. We have somebody very, very qualified and a very, you know, trustworthy family friend that is taking care of them in the mornings for me to be able to come back to work. And things have been working themselves out. It's just a new normal for all of us. So that's what I'm dealing with right now.
You know, yes, John and I have been, you know, talking to listeners, who've been talking to people who all have concern for you and your family, and it's moving for us too, because as you know, we care a lot about you and your family. And John and I have been both very, very moved by this whole situation between the memorial party you had, between the comedy show and the fundraiser that happened on Saturday. We appreciate everyone's help and everyone's concern.
I can't express how grateful I am that, and it's overwhelming. And it took me a while, you know, when nobody even asked me about this whole benefit thing. It was just kind of popped up, and I'm like, well, where did this, you know? And I was kind of mad about it when I saw it on social media. And then after talking with several people, it's like, you would have said no anyway.
Yeah.
And because we are not the type, we were never the type of people to take help from somebody. We were always trying to help somebody else. And it's very hard for me to accept help from people. And I feel awful sometimes when people, you know, I got people mowing my lawn. I got people, you know, doing things that I physically can't do right now because of my mental state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I'm so grateful for it. And even if I didn't get to respond to any of you, your messages and people I don't know, and it took me a while to realize that my entire adult life has been unraveled on this show. And people have gone through all of the life experiences that I've had, and you know, including my marriage, my birth, my children, and all the stories in between. It's hard to accept that sometimes because I just come in here and I think I'm just telling dick jokes for the most part, you know, and it's overwhelming, but it's also humbling too.
Well, one of the things you said, and I can't agree more, is that it's not fair, and it doesn't pick and it doesn't choose, and I have been impressed. And any time I've told somebody the story, and I've said, trying to imagine two children under 10 at a job you have to be at 5:30 in the morning, and you live in Huntington, and knowing even, and we weren't in a lot of conversation with you because we wanted to give you your space, and we knew you needed to be a father more than anything. And I was always impressed, though, by the few times that we did speak, and then even the texting also, that not surprisingly was your priority, but also how well you seem to have been handling it, and to get to a point now where you're able to turn your children over to the care of someone that you found and you trust enough to be able to do that and be able to at least resume the routine that you were used to.
And that was the hardest part, was to make sure my girls are my number one priority. Everything else is secondary. If I couldn't come back to here to this job, too bad. You know, you got to put your big boy pants on and take care of what you need to take care of. But luckily, you know, I need to come here. I need to laugh. I need to, you know, talk about these idiots that do things in the news that, you know.
We need the dick jokes.
Exactly. Right. Everybody needs a good dick joke.
That's right.
But it's just that's what I'm dealing with right now. And, you know, people ask you how you are, and it's like, well, how the, you think I'm doing, you know? Right. But it's, I think people just want to help some way, and they did. I mean, all the money raised on Saturday night is going directly to my children for their college funds, and you know, there's things that are going to come up later in life with, you know, braces or, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna need something, and I can't thank everybody enough for coming out on Saturday.
Well, Steve, on behalf of everybody here, and not just John and I, but everybody in this building, yeah, we appreciate you coming back, and yeah, it's good to have you.
And I just want to, you know, really point out to the staff at the I don't even know how to say it. Is it Caritas or Caritas?
Yes, Caritas.
Caritas.
Yeah. At Mercy Medical Center, at the Cancer Center, the nursing staff up there is the best. I mean, we became like a little family up there from the frequent visits up there. And there, you know, there's Katie and there's Cindy and there's all these other nurses and staff there. And especially, I just want to make note of Nurse Kelly O'Brien, who was my wife's nurse. And who, you know, really had a personal connection with my wife, I think because they're around the same age and, you know, similar life experiences. And she was just an angel for my wife and comforted her not only while she was getting her treatments, but also when my wife was moved up to the fifth floor and took time, her own personal time, to come up to make sure my wife was comfortable in those final days and those final moments. And to the point where that was one of the last times my wife actually smiled, when she saw her coming over the bed and she was tucking her in and getting her ice packs and giving her some dignity, if you will. I can't thank her enough, and my family can't thank her enough. I mean, I wish there was a lot more people like that in that field.
Well, Jen was a great, great woman, and we got to know her pretty well. There were a lot of people who were present at the John Boyle O'Reilly when Jen was there that night also, and that's where I got a lot of feedback from people who were glad to have met her. Saw her that evening. She looked great. She felt great. At least that's what she told people. And if it wasn't, then I give her even more credit for the stoicism. But she was a great woman. Yeah. And I know your girls will be fine.
Yeah. And it happened that quickly. I mean, within a couple of weeks, things started to turn downhill. Now people are asking me, I'll end with this, how the kids are doing.
Mm.
And talking to these, you know, we're going to a bereavement group. We just started that, and, you know, we're going to see how that pans out. And kids are, they deal with grief differently than we do, than adults do. And they don't process it like we do. There's not a lot of crying. There's not a lot of screaming. There's not a lot of, you know, all the things that I've been doing,
mm-hmm,
you know, when I have my moments. And they basically feel sad about something, and then they start playing again. Like, that's how they kind of process things. So they're doing well, and to the point where my oldest, and this is where my humor has backfired on me, where her and I were talking about different things that Mom used to do around the house and what can we do to kind of not replace Mom, but at least, you know, get along those same routines. And we talked about those things, and then at the end there was just kind of like this little silent moment, and I said to her, yeah, I really miss Mommy. And then she looks at me and she goes, well, then why don't you go upstairs on your pillow and cry about it?
They're going to be okay.
Yes,
right
yes.
back in my face.
Obviously, yep. They will be.
Right. Hey, with Bax and O'Brien of Rock 102.